joy, peace, long suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vain glory, provoking one another, envying one another. That's quite a list. The fruit of the Spirit. Brethren, I don't think that anyone in their right mind could say that anyone has any right to change the order of God. The person who reaches maturity as a Christian, whether that person is a brother or a sister, makes no difference. That person will be known as mature, as that person has produced in and through him the fruit of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is not criticism of others. The fruit of the Spirit is not talking evil of others. The fruit of the Spirit is not seeking to put yourself on a pedestal by putting someone else off it. The fruit of the Spirit, says the Scripture, is first of all love. Now why love first? I always ask myself questions like that. Well, because love, brethren and sisters, is not just the greatest thing in the world. Love is the greatest thing in any world. That's why it's first. You know, there are some strange people who would think that being a Christian means that you're not to show, you're not to demonstrate love. I can't think of any other injunction in the Scripture, of any other thing that God demands of us, which is more demanded than this beautiful, wonderful grace of love. Love is one of the graces here that's described for us in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. It's long-suffering. That is, it will endure cruel provocation. Not just ordinary provocation. You know, there's provoking, which isn't cruel. You can provoke one another to good works. But cruel provocation, that's a different matter altogether. You know, it's so easy to fall into the idea that if you are cruelly provoked, that you must retaliate. Retaliation would show that this great factor in the fruit of the Spirit is sadly missing. And of course, love shows itself in kindness. Love not only endures provocation, but love also will not resort to cruel provocation itself. Because kindness is just the opposite to cruelly provocate someone. And it doesn't envy. It doesn't look at anyone else's well-being and say, well, why should they have that? Or why should they be blessed like that? You know, love doesn't look at someone else's house or car or something like that and say, must be something wrong in the way they got that. Because love does not envy. And love doesn't vaunt itself. It's not ambitious for first place. That's not love. I believe that the person who's ambitious, the person who wants to vaunt themselves, they're the people who are not fitted for the place that they're seeking. That's obvious. Any position among Christian people must first of all be subjected to this wondrous fruit of the Spirit. Some people ask me, what do I need for to go out in the work of the Lord? Well, I tell you, you don't need for to be the kind of person who wants to try and get yourself a name and get out at the front or have people to notice you. You need to be the kind of person who has the Spirit of God governing in your life. And if the Spirit of God is governing in your life, then you won't want to vaunt yourself. Love shrinks from that. And it's not puffed up. It's not conscious. Love isn't conscious of its own importance. I knew a man for many years. He used to live near me over there in England. And he was a great man. He was a man of God. I'll tell you why he was a great man. He was one of the most childlike men that I ever knew. He was a great man because he was the only one who didn't know it. And he was a master in the Scriptures. And a man who helped God's people over many years. And he was a man who loved. My, how that man loved. You know, I think it's a tragedy when someone wants position among God's people and you see self-vaunting, you see self-exalting. Brethren and sisters, there's nothing more tragic than a comic exaltation of self when the person doesn't really mean to be comical. But you know, you can watch some people, if you watch them carefully, and you'll find really it's tragically comical about them. The way they want everybody to see how important they are. That's not love, brethren. Love doesn't vaunt itself. And love doesn't behave itself unseemly. That is, love isn't given to rudeness. Not rude to a person. Considers the feelings of others. And I'll have to be very careful watching that time because I believe it would consider the time of others too. Love doesn't offend in being rude. Doesn't behave itself unseemly. And seeks not its own. That is, love is a selfless experience. Love isn't seeking, what can I get? It's what can I give? God so loved that he gave. The Son of God loved me and he gave. Christ loved the church and he gave. That's love. Love is selfless. It's sacrificial. And love is not easily provoked. It's got its hands on the reins. It bridles passions. That's love. Doesn't go overboard, you know, with the slightest thing. You know, you make up your mind something's going to be done in the assembly or in the Sunday school or something like that and somebody crosses you. Whoa! Everybody's got to know that you're upset about that matter. That's not love, my brother, my sister. And love thinks no evil. That is, it doesn't. Love does not bear malice. That's the idea of that. Love doesn't bear malice towards someone. Love hasn't evil intentions to hurt someone. You know, the child of God who deliberately goes out of their way, a person who goes out of his or her way to hurt someone, is showing just the opposite to love. Love isn't like that. Love rejoices not over iniquity. That simply means that if someone else gets downed by Satan, someone else is snared,
someone else falls. Well, love doesn't rejoice over that. Love doesn't say, serve him right. That's not love. Love never rejoices over the fall of another. In fact, love rejoices with the truth, along with the truth, as truth would rejoice, love rejoices. You see, love is happy when truth prevails. That's love. And love beareth all things, willing to forego anything. That's love. But we remember, of course, that love and truth walk hand in hand. We just pointed that out. Don't, what God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. But love beareth all things. You heard of the little girl who was asked why she was always happy. She was always singing. She was always smiling. You know what she says? I've just been home. And they said, well, what do you mean? And she says, you know, in our house, we got two bears. And those two bears make me very happy. Two bears make you happy. She says, yeah. She says, my daddy taught me all about them. One of them's called Bear and the other one's called Forbear. And I tell you, well, you've got that Bear and Forbear. You've got the idea of love. Love beareth all things and believes all things. That is, love is confident always. Confident in the Lord on the one hand, confident in his saints on the other hand. You know, love doesn't say, the Lord, perhaps he's managed in other cases, but he can't manage in mine. That's not love. Love's absolutely confident, and love's confident in the saints too. I don't know whether there are some brethren who move in a different sphere to mine, but I tell you that the dear saints that I know and love, my friends, my circle, I don't have to tell them about the awful evil things that go on in the world out there. They're quite aware of it. And some of them haven't been long before they've come out of it, you know. It's not so long since they came out of it. You don't have to tell them about it. They know about it. And bless them. What they're trying to find is how they can be more like the Lord Jesus. You know, I don't like to go to a man and say, could you tell me the way to such and such a place? And he says, well, don't go down that street and don't go down that. Don't go down there. No, don't take that road and don't take that road. If he would just tell me, look, there's the road. Take that road. I'm satisfied. And I believe, brethren, that our attitude toward one another ought to be an attitude of godly confidence in each other. That's first of that. Because that's love. That's love. Love's always confident. Believes all things. Hopes all things, that is, love is always optimistic. Optimistic about what's going to be tomorrow. Why, if the same Lord who saved me yesterday is the Lord who's with me today and he's going to be with me tomorrow, I have every right to be optimistic. That's love. Not saying, well, everything's going to fall around about our ears. I'm sure if we'd have been in the boat with Thomas, you know, when one of them was thinking about saying, well, come on, Lord, and help us, I'm sure that Thomas, in his own inimitable way, he would have been saying, it was the same brother who said this years ago, I remember. Harry Bell. That's Thomas would have said, cheer up, lads. We'll soon be at the bottom. That's not love. That's not love. Brethren. Love is optimistic. Love says, look, the Lord can do it, and the Lord will do it. You know, that would save us from condemning any of the Lord's dear people who are trying to serve him in their own way. Who art thou that judgeth another man's servant? Who art thou that judgeth another man's servant? To his own master he stands or he falls, and his master's able to make them stand. That's being optimistic, brethren. And that's being scriptural, too. Love hopes all things and endures all things. It's always patient. And you know, love never fails. That simply means that love
eternally remains. It doesn't mean that love always gets the victory in the end, because sometimes, as you know, love can be very cruelly treated. But love eternally abides. And joy? Well now, brethren, I think that there have been many great Greek scholars who have set before us various truths concerning the New Testament, and I think one of the greatest of the Greek scholars was Calvin. I'm not talking about his doctrine, I'm talking about his Greek scholarship. And when Calvin takes this word, joy, and shows the meaning of it, he shows that it really has to do with cheerfulness. It really has to do with your whole behavior. That your behavior is a behavior that radiates cheerfulness. That's how Calvin shows the meaning of this word. And I believe that's the meaning of it. You know, we're never intended to be martyrs to misery. I know some dear people, and at their brightest, bless them, they look like a basset hound dog that's got distemper. And that's never, never the meaning of joy. I think that joy, while joy might be untellable, brethren, while it is unspeakable, I believe that it's never unshowable. You see, it's the merry heart that makes the cheerful countenance. And so if your heart's right, then your countenance is going to be right. And so love and joy and peace, you know, peace, it's just simply tranquility. Tranquility. And if ever you want the real emblem of tranquility, you have to go to the dove. And I believe that if we sought more to be like the doves and less like the vultures, then we do well, brethren, you know. There's the parable of the vulture and the dove both flying over the same meadowland, and the dove looking down and seeing beautiful flowers and blossom and all the verdant pasture and so on. And that's what the dove could see, was looking with dove's eyes. You know, when the vulture flew over, all it could see was a dead rat. Depends what you're looking for. And if your heart is governed by tranquility, then you'll have tranquil thoughts, thoughts of peace. And long-suffering, Mr. Darby says, this word really means kindness. I believe that it's kindness, a kindly reaction towards something that comes against you. To suffer long, of course, but to suffer long in a kindly way. And I believe that this is something that we ought to show to our own children to begin with if we're Christians. I don't think that any Christian boy or Christian girl should be afraid of coming to their dad, or to their mum for that matter, and to be able to talk matters over with you. If you're showing them kindness, well, I believe that they'll be ready to do that. Don't be the kind of person who says, well, if somebody gets at me, I'm just going to have to get them back, otherwise that puts me down. Look, without letting anybody else put you down, you put yourself down. You take the lowly place. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, and he'll exalt you in due season. Now, I often like to use that illustration of the big bull terrier sitting on the front lawn, and anything that came anywhere near him, just that deep rumble of a growl, and it would take off. And I came trotting up to him one day, a little creature just a few inches long, with a tail twice as long as its body, all black and white. A skunk. And a skunk came up to the bull terrier and started to spar around him, saying, come on, I'll fight you. I'll show you who's boss. You know the bull terrier? He looked across his snub nose, and he smiled, and he said, nice to see you. The skunk says, ah, you're afraid of me, aren't you? Oh, well, glad to see you along, anyhow. And that went on for a while until the skunk gave up and said, not worth bothering with, and took off.
You know, next door neighbor dog poked its head through the hedge and said, "Hey, why didn't you whip him? You could whip him any day." You know what the bull terrier says? He says, "Brother, there's some fights not worth winning." Let me tell you, my brother, my sister, you could win the fight, you know, but it would leave a stink on you that you'll carry for years. You're far better to just be long-suffering about the matter. And then there's gentleness, and I believe gentleness is thoughtful, kindly, courteous activity. That's gentleness. In fact, if I wanted to get an English word which I thought the most fitted here, I would say it was being knightly. You know, the Christian should be known for knightly virtues. The Christian should be the kind of person that, unlike the world, still has what they call the old-fashioned virtue of being courtly, kindly, courteous, knightly. You know what that means? If some of our young men would realize it, it means that when the dear old sister's trying to get out of that car, you go and you open the door for her and you'll escort her out of the car. That kind of thing. That's what I'm talking about. It's practical. Oh yeah, you'll do it for the younger sisters too, mind you. And you won't do it to draw attention to yourself. You'll do it because you want to be like the Lord, who would lend out a helping hand to all and sundry around about him, whether they're old or whether they're young. That's gentleness. You know, David, he said many great things, but I think one of the most interesting things David ever said about his God, in Psalm 18 and verse 35, he says, "Thy gentleness has made me great." David was a great man. Oh, was he not? And he said, it was God's gentleness that made him like that. You know, brothers and sisters, when we get young converts, when we get lads in our midst, for instance, if we treat them right, treat them with gentleness, we can help them on to greatness. There's been many a young Christian life that has been ruined through ungentle, through harsh treatment. Gentleness can produce greatness in others. And then there's goodness. Now, goodness isn't something that someone kind of talks about after you're dead. You know, that's what some people think goodness is. You wait until after you're dead, and then whether you've done it or not, they'll tell you he was such a good man, you know. In fact, I heard of one case where they were burying a man, well, they were having a service, and they were preaching over the man's coffin, and they were telling all about him, what a great man he was, how kind he was, how good he was, how gentle he was, and all the rest of it. And you know, his little boy was sitting there with his mother there, and he gave his mother a dig. He says, "Mum, you better go and have a look in that coffin. I think they got the wrong man in there." You know, I knew a man, his name was Cyril Weaver. Some of the brethren might remember him. And Cyril Weaver, he was this kind of a man. When he died, they told me over the phone, and my little boy, then he was only 4 or 5 year old, Paul, and I heard the news of Cyril Weaver's home call. My little boy had heard it, and he said, "Dad, is Uncle Cyril, has he died?" And I said, "Yes, son." A big tear came rolling down his cheek, and that little boy, 4 or 5 year old, he said, "He was a good man, Dad." You know, I think that that's the most wonderful thing I've heard anyone say about anybody. "He was a good man, Dad." See, listen, what will the little children say about you when you're called away? What will your family really say and think? What about your friends? You know, goodness, well, goodness is something that we ought to be practicing, brethren. It ought to be said of every child of God that that person is a good person. And faith, well, that's trustfulness. I believe it has to be confidence in the Lord. And real confidence in the Lord is expressed, I believe, through a conformity to His Word. If we're going to trust Him, we'll trust His Word. If His Word says it, we'll do it. If His Word wants us to be that, well, that's what we'll be. I was thinking when Brother Jack was talking about Elijah there, of the drying up of the brook, you know, and Elijah standing there watching it. And I thought, would Elijah say, as he saw the brook drying up, would he say, "Why, Lord? Why?" Or perhaps Elijah already knew it was because the Lord wanted it that way. Now look, brethren and sisters, you know, in Christian experience, it may be that your brook is drying up. Sometimes sisters are hoping for certain things to happen in their lives. Oh, if only this would happen. And at first, it seems maybe it's going to be, and weeks and months and years can go by. You say to yourself, the brook is drying up. Sometimes a brother, with some aim, some specific aim, oh, if only this is going to be, and at first it seems likely, this is how it'll turn out. And the brook is drying up. Why? Maybe that little boy or little girl came into the family. And tragically, what you hoped to be, the laughing, jumping, silvery stream, there's something wrong. There's a tragedy there. The brook is drying up, and you say, why? You know, I believe I can always tell you the reason why. If things are happening in your life that are subjecting you to the outside influences of hatred or provocation or care or sorrow or that which could bring uncertainty, I'll tell you why. It's because you prayed that God would make you like His Son. And if you've prayed that God would make you like His Son, God has a process to do it. And if you're going to be like His Son, you're going to find provocation. You're going to find unkindness. You're going to find hurt. You'll even find malice. You'll find things coming against you that you didn't dream would ever come against you. You'll find the brook drying up. But I tell you, if you look up to God and say, well, I'm still confident, I'm still going to trust my God, you'll find that the brooks will run again. You'll find that the time will come when they'll overflow their banks. God is able to do that. It's confidence in the Lord that's meant by faith. And then meekness, and brethren, that's not weakness. Meekness, I think our Lord, more than anyone, lived out a life of meekness. You know, it really is a sweetness of disposition being displayed. That's meekness. It's disposition, a sweet disposition of character, but it's that which is displayed. I remember sitting in a conference with some dear brethren, and one of the brethren, he gave me a nudge, and he pointed along the table to where some of our brethren, I don't know what they were talking about, I don't think they could have been talking about anything very cheerful, and he says, I think what we got for dessert, brother, is sour rhubarb. And I just looked like that, brethren. Brethren, listen. Sweetness. Sweetness. Sweetness doesn't grate on people unless there's something wrong with them. Hardness, harshness, that will grate on people. But sweetness, no. And temperance, that's control. Self-control. Control of your temper, if you like, yes, but also control of your desires and control of your actions and control of your tongue, brethren and sisters. Oh, it'd be a wonderful thing if, through the ministry this afternoon, every one of us was to produce more of this blessed, wonderful, holy fruit.